You are listening to WJRH 104.9 FM, Lafayette College Radio, Easton, Pennsylvania. This is Sports Talk with Matt Peters. I am your host, Matt, of course. You can listen on WJRH.org as well. And feel free to call in at 610-330-5316. This will be a phone line open show today. If you have anything you want to get off your chest about sports, local teams, the free agency market in baseball, NBA All-Star Weekend, really anything. So I will repeat, 610-330-5316. So I think the best way to open up this show is to talk about the monstrous news that came out of Major League Baseball free agency yesterday. The one or two biggest prize on the market, Manny Machado, the Enigma, has finally signed a 10-year, $300 million contract with the San Diego Padres. It is the largest free agent deal in American sports. Now, there has been a ton of talk about free agents not getting paid. This is the opposite of that. This is pretty much in market value with what people expected Manny Machado to get when the offseason started. There were rumors about like $400 million, $350. No. If you're being realistic, 10-year, $300 really is all that he was going to get. It is a great deal for him. It is also a great deal for Bryce Harper, who is also looking for a 10-year contract, probably more money than this one. I would suspect that Bryce Harper is looking for 3 years for $325 million for 10 years. That is my estimate on that one. Manny Machado, though, goes to the Padres, a team who was a real dark horse for him all offseason. They really swooped in at the end. I read an article that they saw signing him or Bryce Harper not only a baseball move, but also a business move. And so he goes to a team who is currently rebuilding, but has by far the number one farm system in baseball. This is good news for him because the contract is 10 years. So it is not like next season's the only one that matters. A lot of things being thrown around is 2020 because this team, quite frankly, is not ready at the moment. They have no starting pitching at all. They are very young, but a lot of their top prospects are pitchers. Of course, we hear a lot about Fernando Tatis Jr., the number one prospect in all of baseball. He'll come up and play short or third. Julio Urias, who had a little taste of the bigs last year, will play second in the long term. Of course, you have Eric Hosmer at first. You got a good catching tandem with Francisco Mejia and Austin Hedges. And then a ton of outfielders, including Will Myers, making $22 million starting next year. So that is one thing. The Padres have three players, Eric Hosmer, Will Myers, Manny Machado, making $70-plus million starting next season. This is a team whose budget has been historically low because I don't think San Diego's a small market, but they don't spend anywhere near a big market. That is for sure. I hear it's a very nice ballpark. Of course, with it being 70 degrees and sunny every day, it's made for baseball, but that's not necessarily indicative of the owner's spending. So there are two options for the Padres. One is to wait until next year and see these young pitchers and outfielders develop a little bit more, and then they can take over the roster, or you package some up, try to get some pitching. If I was GM AJ Preller, who is historically very aggressive, we know that offseason a couple years ago when they signed James Shields, traded for Craig Kimbrell and Justin Upton, everyone thought they were going to be the next big thing. They really fell flat on their face. But that is different. I think this team is poised for the future because of all the prospects they have. And so what I would do is trade some of the outfielders who are in the bigs now for some not low-level pitching, but ones that are under the radar a bit. Don't swing for the fences. There was rumors at the beginning of the offseason with Corey Kluber, Noah Syndergaard. Obviously, those players are off the table now. The Indians and Mets are getting ready for the regular season. So I would just try to package up pitchers, my outfielders for pitchers. Because you have Brian Mitchell, former Yankee, not great, who is the fifth starter, and that's a bit of an issue. So the Padres, I would call this a successful deal. I mean, you can't call $300 million a bargain, but it's a fair contract. It's what he was in line for, if not less than. And ultimately, this doesn't make the Padres a contender in 2019, but this team is poised for the future. You see a lot of the Nationals, when they signed Jason Worth in their rebuild, and that's sort of like the Will Myers of this team, or the Eric Hosmer. And then now you get Manny Machado, who is comparable to like the Bryce Harper edition. And so really all you need now is some starters, and then you have yourself a contending team. And I don't think it's going to be hard for them to get starters. They're just going to have to pull the trigger on some trades, because it's not the easiest thing to give up your prospects when you believe in them. But in the long run, that's what it takes to win a championship. Great. And so also news shifts to now where Harper is going. And I still think it's the Philadelphia Phillies. They're the only ones with a ton of pressure on them to sign, because let's face it, the Phillies are a team in need of a face. Rhys Hoskins has been billed the face. He's not a real face yet. I'm not saying he can't be next year, the year after, but he's not a player who's gonna do all the spokesperson stuff a team needs, be on every poster, really just light up, be iconic, and bring people to the ballpark. Not anything against Rhys Hoskins. There's only, I'd say, 10 players in baseball, definitely less than, but no more than 10, who can drive people to the ballpark. You got Jacob DeGrom, Noah Syndergaard, Aaron Judge, Jose Altuve, Mike Trout a little bit, Bryce Harper, Manny Machado a little bit. It depends on the market. But, yeah, you have the aces, and then you have the superstar hitters. That's pretty much it. And Bryce Harper, because of his personality, he's won an MVP, six-time All-Star. He is a face of the franchise. That's a fact. You can call him overrated if you want to. I know his fielding isn't great. He hit 250 last year. I would take Bryce Harper on my team any day of the week. I think he's still getting better. His ceiling is higher than anyone not Mike Trout in the league. I truly believe that. I think he can hit 50 homers a year if he was at full strength, in the right ballpark, because his swing with that uppercut, it's insane. So I still think Harper's going to the Phillies, but I just wanted to comment on general manager Matt Klentak of the Phillies. He said that his valuation of the player in Machado, it was not in line with his contract. They didn't want to go 10 years, $300 million. This is a little alarming, just because if you're not going 10 years, $300 mil on Machado, we all know Harper is going to break that record. I would be incredibly surprised if he gets less than that. And so, do they value Harper at 10 years, 300? 10 years, 325, 310? You know, that's the question, because the pressure's on them to get him. There's really only one of him left on the market. They were keep playing that waiting game of, we'll sign one of the two. Well, there's only one left. So I am curious to see what happens with Bryce Harper. We hear rumors with the Giants that they're not ready to go on a rebuild. I respect that. I think it's not smart in baseball terms, because I think they're going to be an old, aging team who is just around 500. But you got to respect that in a league where half the teams are rebuilding. At least they're trying to be competitive, and at least they are signing players. People make the argument that these long-term deals don't pay off all the time. That is true, but when a player is 26, when it ends at age 36. You're only risking 2 years of decline, I think. Unless, of course, it's like a Carl Crawford type where they just lose all type of baseball inhibitions. And that really comes back to the personality of the player. You really have to do your due diligence on their work ethic, see if they're going to change, because let's face it, some players, when they get $80 million, they decide to relax a little bit because they pretty much got their worth in a sense. And that's the problem with guaranteed contracts, but it is what baseball is. So if it's not the Phillies, it would be the Giants, I think. I think the rumors of the Padres also going after Bryce Harper are insane. There is no chance that team more than doubles their payroll on two players. I think Machado is already like a quarter of their payroll or a third, like some insane number. And you have Eric Hosmer's $22 million on that this year. So I wouldn't even do that with like a lot of money. I would not do that. Bryce Harper, he's in an interesting scenario right now because there are reports of him not wanting to go to Philadelphia. And I think these are just hearsay stuff that people put out there on other teams to try to sway the public image of him. Because I don't think there would be any reason why this report would come out now. And it seems like Harper is just going to go where the money is, quite honestly. And if that's Philadelphia, that's Philadelphia. The Nationals, I think, have had that ship sail. And so we'll see. Hopefully by next week's episode, we get a good gist of the Bryce Harper market. And finally, we could do season predictions, because it's really hard talking about where these teams stand when a big game changer who can win like plus three games for a year, which doesn't sound like much in the grand scheme of things, but 86, 89 wins. That's a wild card to a not wild card. So I'm excited for that. There's a lot of talk with the extensions in baseball. We saw Aaron Nola, the ace of the Phillies, get a contract extension, and Luis Severino also get one. I'm pretty sure Nola's bought out 2 years of his free agency, while Severino bought out 1 year. And these are low-risk moves for the organizations, and it gives the players a lot of financial security, which is something that is very important to a lot of us. So I think it's smart for this, but I also think the league is going towards that extension before free agency mindset now, because we see players like Jacob DeGrom, who doesn't want to... There was a report that he wants to put a innings limit on, or he was asked, will you limit your innings? And he said he'll have to talk with his agent about that. His agent has the best interest in him. And so when you look at that, they have two more years of control on DeGrom. He's 31. Is it really smart to give him an extension now when you don't need to? No. For him, he's going to go through arbitration, make record money through arbitration. But of course, as a pitcher, you're one pitch away from blowing out your shoulder. So it is a risky endeavor, and I can see why he wants an extension, but it just isn't smart from the club's point of view with a player like him. There's rumors Aaron Judge would be open to an extension with the Yankees, and the team is still having him on his rookie deal this year. He's going to be in arbitration next year. It's not really necessary for the team to do that, but you can lock up your face of the franchise. And that is also important, keeping them happy, because the more and more we get these players, their personalities are big and they have platforms to get their feelings out, and it can really lead to a lot of distress in a clubhouse, and you don't want anything leaking onto the field, of course. And we are only 4 days away from spring training games. Everyone's reported already, and games officially start Friday and Saturday for most teams. So that is very exciting. I know the games don't matter, but you get a nice peek into each team's roster, can see some top prospects. And I am personally one who really enjoys watching a little bit of spring training. Definitely, you know, not a whole game, But seeing those at-bats to the big prospects, the stars coming back, it's refreshing. And seeing sunny Florida makes me miss it, especially when we're supposed to get snow in a couple hours. And so, yeah, I guess you can take me to Tampa for some spring training games right about now. That would be really nice. All right, we're going to shift a little bit. This weekend was the NBA All-Star festivities in Charlotte. And it was a pretty decent weekend, I'd say. You know, Friday night with the Rising Stars Challenge, it was a game where the players really put on a show. I thought it was more exciting than the All-Star game. There's a lot of good talent in it. And I think the league doesn't have that next superstar in their first couple years. There's a lot of players with flaws. But still, there's a lot of good prospects. And then, of course, the Saturday night Skills Challenge. The winner was Jason Tatum of the Boston Celtics. Then you had the three-point contest. Joe Harris, of all people, beat two-time MVP Stephen Curry in the finals. And that is a David and Goliath story, if you ever heard one, because Joe Harris was run out of the league for 6 months. He signed a minimum deal with the Nets versus one of the greatest, well, let's be honest, the greatest shooter in NBA history. So that was interesting. And then the dunk contest, a Diallo from the Oklahoma City Thunder won in a very less than spectacular competition, but he had one great dunk where he went over Shaquille O'Neal into hanging by his elbow by the Vince Carter dunk of 2000. Then the All-Star game happened. Team LeBron beat Team Giannis. We could all see that from the rosters, but it was closer than people expected because Steph Curry showed up and a lot of players, Giannis showed up for sure. And MVP of that game was Kevin Durant. And if you just think about what would have happened if Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Russ Westbrook all stayed on the same roster and they would have traded Serge Ibaka instead. I mean, we're looking at the dynasty in the NBA. There's no one that could have competed with that team. But then the question comes, would James Harden be James Harden if he didn't leave and become the alpha male of the Houston Rockets? That's a good question. And Russell Westbrook, he's in a bit of a shooting drought, but I am a Russell Westbrook believer because of how much he does on the court. It is debatable whether he can be the best player on a team that wins a championship, but I think he could be the second best team player. And Paul George is on his level right now, if not better. I think he's very underrated. So that's interesting. But the NBA is off until Friday. So, yeah, you have a couple days to not see games. When it comes back, I say a third of the season's left only. And the question is, are the 76ers pretenders or contenders? And I think they have no bench. Yes, everyone's making a big deal about their starting five, but five players don't play 48 minutes each. And, you know, J.J. Redick's not the spring chicken. Tobias Harris is good. He's like one of those, like, second-tier players, which is not a star, but better than most of the league. Jimmy Butler doesn't have a shot, but he's great. And Ben Simmons has zero shot. And then Joel Embiid is incredible when he's on the floor. So you're looking at a team which is top heavy for sure. Their bench does not have a lot of depth. They are a prime contender to sign some buyout candidates. I thought they should have gone after Enes Kanter, because they could have used some insurance for if Embiid needs a minutes limit or he pulls something, which, I mean, we never know with seven-footers. Antonio Brown, the Pittsburgh Steelers star, it's looking like he's going to be traded. He met with the owners, and he announced on social media that they said it's time to part ways. So That's in addition to a certain team. He's already 31, of course, but he wants another big contract. You're banking on the next 2 years being great because he's going to start declining soon. And it seems like his personality is all over the place. He one day hates the Steelers, one day loves the Steelers, one day calls them out. Like, it's a bit alarming if you're going to invest a lot of money in him. But all in all, Antonio Brown is worth taking a chance on for a lot of teams. And then I just saw a MLB, I saw an NFL draft prediction that Kyler Murray, the former MLB draft pick, is the number one overall pick to the Cardinals. That is what they are predicting. And if that happens, I think it'll be a huge blunder by the Arizona Cardinals. They have Josh Rosen, who has all the skill in the world, all the God-given gifts to be an incredible quarterback. But his personality, of course, is not one which a lot of teams want to invest a lot in. Well, that's why they want to go Kyler Murray. And then I heard that the Patriots and Bill Belichick has interest in trading for Josh Rosen to become Tom Brady's heir apparent to the throne. So that is very interesting development, because now we have Belichick prepared for life after Brady. And everyone always wonders, what is going to happen when one retires? Is the other going to follow? I don't think so. I think Brady's going to retire eventually because he has to. And then Belichick is going to stay another year and show everyone that it's the system and what he does, not Tom Brady, who won the championships. I honestly think that's true. If they retire together, that will be beautiful and I think the right decision, but I don't see it happening with Belichick. I think he does have a low-key ego. That is why he is so quietly arrogant all the time. So if they trade for Josh Rosen, you're looking at the future of the franchise. And Kyler Murray, that team only wants him because their offensive line is so awful that they just want that quick fix rather than what will actually win them a championship in the future. Again, you are listening to WJRH 104.9 FM, Lafayette College Radio, Easton, Pennsylvania. This is Sports Talk with Matt Peters. Now I have to read some public service announcements. So every 98 seconds, an American is sexually assaulted. The effects of sexual violence aren't easily to deal with, but with the right help, they can be managed. If you need a talk, call the National Sexual Assault Hotline at 1-800-656-HOPE or visit RAINN.org for free. Confidential support 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-656-4673 and RAINN.org. You don't have to go through this alone. When experiencing depression, I couldn't get out of bed or focus. My goals and dreams drifted away. I got my life back through the help of a support group of people who had been where I was. They helped me see that my life wasn't limited, that I could achieve my dreams. 50,000 people find compassion and encouragement at their local Depression and Bipolar Support Alliance support group. Visit supporthelps.org or call 800-826-3632 to learn more. We've been there. We can help. Well, I haven't been there, but it was in first person, so I read it. Last one. A home fire can strike anywhere, anytime, devastating families. But we can change that. The American Red Cross is working to reduce the number of fire deaths and injuries in communities. Working with volunteers, we are visiting homes to install smoke alarms, replace smoke alarm batteries, and help families develop an escape plan. We can't do it without your help. Join for Fire Prevention Campaign. Visit redcross.org to volunteer today. So, that was fun. I haven't read a PSA in a while. So, I thought it would be good this week to do some top 10 lists. I'm going to do one for the top 10 NBA players. And then I'll jump into my top 10 MLB rankings of each position. So, that will take a lot of the show. I'm excited for that. Jumping in for the top 10 NBA players of this year, no, but if I made a team Who do I think is the best? That is what this list is. So we will start it with number 10. We have Joel Embiid. This man has been a dominant force ever since he stepped foot on the NBA court, 1 year late because of injury. And that is the key to him. Dominance, but fragility. It's just the name of the game when you deal with people that large, whose presence in the post. He's a dynamic shooter as well. He is the best player on that team. I don't think it's even a debate between him, Ben Simmons, and Jimmy Butler. He's the one who would win them a championship if they won one. He's the one who can get 20 rebounds a game, 35 points in the playoffs. I can see him taking over the court. So I have him at number 10, and I think there is some room for growth with him. Number 9, Damian Lillard. A very underrated player in the league, I think, still, just because he's always in Portland. They're not the best team. It's just him and CJ McCollum, pretty much. But every year he finds a way to get Portland Trail Blazers into the playoffs in an incredibly tough conference. He does it all quietly. He is a professional. You don't hear any drama about him trying to get out of Portland or anything. Shows up every day. I'm a huge Damian Lillard fan. Number 8, I have Paul George. The Oklahoma City Thunder are doing good this year, not because of Russell Westbrook and his triple-double average, but if you watch each game, it's because of Paul George and his clutch shooting and ability to really take over the scoring duties from Westbrook, who is a bit all over the place on offense. So Paul George has been a great addition to that team, and the Thunder aren't necessarily championship contenders, but they are competitive every day, and I can see them winning a couple of games in a series against the Warriors, but ultimately losing, of course. Number 7, Anthony Davis, the soon-to-be not Pelican, because he has requested a trade, and when he's on the court, he is a top-10 player. This is when the list gets very tough, because the top 7 I have on here are all ones who I can see a different day being the best. But Anthony Davis is a tenacious rebounder with some great scoring. The only issue with him is that he's been in New Orleans for a long time, and they haven't been a real legit threat to any type of title or anything like that. They had DeMarcus Cousins last year, but he was, of course, injured before they could actually compete. You wonder what if. It's not like the franchise didn't try to get other stars, but it just didn't work out. So, Anthony Davis, number 7. I do predict, of course, that he will go to the Lakers just because it's a perfect fit, but Celtics are also an option. Number 6 on my list is James Harden. We all have heard about his streak of 30-point games. He is on a tear right now, but he is another one that I just think is a regular season superstar, and then in the postseason, he's just really good. And I just remember last year he choked in the playoffs, and so I only can put him at number 6. Number 5, Giannis Antetokounmpo of the Milwaukee Bucks. He has really taken it up a notch this year. We thought last year he was a superstar. Well, he's even better now. And I remember him being a rookie, very lanky, no muscle on him, had no shot. He was just pretty much out there rebounding, passing, and just doing easy layups. Well, now he is huge, packed on a ton of muscle, imposing force. Still jumps insanely, does everything. He could be a top 1 player in the league. He is younger than everyone on this list. He is far and away better than everyone else in his age group. Embiid is comparable. But Antetokounmpo needs a jump shot. You're not going to win a championship with no jump shot. He can get to LeBron level of decency. Like when LeBron got to the Heat in his later career, but that has to happen, and I think it will happen, because Giannis is someone who does put time into his work, because you can see how exponentially great he has gotten in the past 5 years. So there is still time. once he can start making a three semi-consistently, I think there's no stopping him, honestly. He's that much more imposing than everyone else on the court. Number four on my list, Kawhi Leonard. This guy is a game changer. The Raptors are a real threat in the East for the Eastern Conference. They just traded for Marc Gasol from the Grizzlies. But everything goes through Kawhi Leonard. We look at the Spurs last year. They were bad without him. They were great with him. And then he goes to the Raptors. He didn't miss a beat. He sat out almost the entirety of last season, and he is back to superstar level. That was the big worry. Is he going to be rusty? No. Kawhi Leonard is a true competitor when he's on the court. And so I'm not sure where he's going to go this summer, but right now he does have the Raptors in true contention for that Eastern Conference title, and that is an accomplishment. All right, number three on my list, Kevin Durant. This might be a little controversial because the other two people on this list who haven't been named are above him, but I have Kevin Durant of the Golden State Warriors at number three. He is great. He can carry a team scoring-wise better than anyone could be on their best day, honestly. He's just not the best player on his team. He's not the best player in the Western Conference. And I think the only reason he has all these championships, of course, is because he went to the Warriors after he lost to them in Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals when he was with the Thunder. I still am not going to be over that. I think that's one of the worst moves an athlete has ever done. You're just joining the team that beat you. I have no respect for that, but you can't call the guy not great because he is great. And so, that being said, it's not his team. If he left the Warriors, you know what? They're still going to be amazing. That's the thing. I think he needs to build an empire with the Knicks this summer, and then that is what will be his true legacy if he can bring a championship to New York. That will be the best next chapter of his career. Number two, I have LeBron James. Number one, maybe this year he seems a little more slow. He's 34 years old. That is the start of the decline. I mean, start of decline was 33, 32 maybe for the NBA-wise. Players just don't stay as superstars as long as other sports. But his game is so well-rounded. I think it's incredible that he's above Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant's a lot younger. But the Lakers are out of the playoffs right now. It's not looking too good for their chances. So I would typically have him at number one. But with this season going the way it has for the Lakers, it's hard putting the best player in the league not in the playoffs. And that brings me to my number one best NBA player, Stephen Curry. I'm not a big Stephen Curry fan, personally. It doesn't give me joy to watch him chuck threes every single game on repeat. But here we are. Steph Curry has done incredible things in this league. He honestly has defined the sport. This is the way LeBron, sure, he is the global superstar. He is an icon. No one can compete with what he's done in his career. But if you look at where the sport's going, who people identify with in the NBA, how kids play the game, no one has changed the way people play basketball more than Stephen Curry. The way the emphasis is on his three-point shot, how he's 6'3". He's undersized, but it doesn't matter. Like, kids love him, and they play the game like him. People can't play the game like LeBron James. That's the thing. LeBron's basketball IQ, unmatched by almost all. His physical gifts are incredible. and he trains insanely to keep that up. Not just saying he was born with it. He does train incredibly, and his work ethic's insane. But when you take Stephen Curry, it's all about the shot. Yes, he's a decent passer. He has some steals here and there, but it's all about that three-pointer, and it is deadly. And that's why they won those championships before KD comes. But the Warriors are known as Stephen Curry's team, and at the end of the day, that's what they are. So I give him my number one NBA player. Now we will jump into my baseball top 10 lists. So this is a lot of top 10s. Now, I'm not going to spend a ton of time on each because there are a lot going on. But I will do my best to get through it succinctly and in order. So I'm going to start with catcher. My number 10 best catcher in baseball is Yadier Molina. He's been around forever. And quite frankly, the catcher position is not that deep. And so I still think due to legacy, due to him bouncing back potentially this year, he was hurt last year a little bit, Yadier Molina is in my number 10 spot. Number 9, Yan Gomes just got traded to the Washington Nationals. I think he's underrated. He can hit 260 with some power. He has a really good arm. He's a little bulky behind the plate, but I see him really manning that Nationals catcher spot well, which was a black hole last year with the shell of his former self, Matt Wieters, back there. So that was a great signing, or trade, I should say. Number 8, I have Wilson Ramos, the New York Met. I think he's underrated. He's an offensive first catcher, which scares a lot of teams. But I think the Mets made a great, great choice with him. 2 years, $18 million. That is a lot better deal than what they offered Yasmani Grandal. Yes, Grandal is the better player. We'll see that later. But I don't think he's worth that much more. So Wilson Ramos comes in at number 8 and can hopefully sturdy that Mets catcher position, which has really not been great the past couple years because they rely on Travis d'Arnaud to be good. And of course, he's always hurt. And then number 7, I have Francisco Cervelli with the Pittsburgh Pirates. He is a good hitter, but I think his best skill is his blocking. He is really agile behind the plate. He's getting up there in age a little bit, no longer in his prime, but Cervelli I would have any day of the week. I think the Pirates are competing, otherwise they would have traded him this offseason. Number 6 on my list, Wilson Contreras. He did not have a good season with the Cubs last year offensively. He had 250 with like 11 home runs. That was a big letdown from what people expected from him. But he is back, another year with MLB experience. He's only 24. So I do expect some growth with him. So that's why I have him 6th on this list. Number 5, I have Salvador Perez. The forgotten man on the Royals. The only one left really from that core that won that championship in 2015. But Salvador Perez is a decent all-round catcher. He doesn't walk a lot at all, but he has power. He can hit for contact sometimes. Not a bad fielder. He is overpaid, of course, but I would still take Salvador Perez as my catcher. So I have a number 5. Number 4 is where Yasmani Grandal falls in, signed with the Brewers on a 1-year, $18 million contract. He is good. But we saw in the playoffs last year, he disappeared. He was a liability in the field. Sometimes he has lapses where I think mentally he gets a little bit better than what he thinks he is, and then he takes things for granted, like his fielding. But he is one who can hit 20 homers, 280 average. He walks and typically can give decent defense. He's not a liability most of the time, but we did see that at the end of last season where he just got in a hole and couldn't get out of it, and then instead he didn't even start games in the World Series. So that is his low, but I think he's going to bounce back. Number 3, MLB catcher, Gary Sanchez. I think it's a testament to not only how light the catching position is right now, but also the potential that Gary Sanchez has, that he is number three on this list, because he could still hit 30 homers a year. I don't think his average is ever going to be what we saw his rookie season, but he could hit 250, walk a little bit, but 30 home runs is definitely still in possibilities. We hear a lot about his defense not being good. He doesn't move behind the plate. He reaches, but he still has a cannon. They say this every single spring training, that players come back in the best shape of their lives, to use a cliche. But that's what Aaron Boone said about Gary Sanchez. So if he can come back 10 pounds lighter, be a little more, I don't want to use the word not lazy. I think he would really fulfill his potential as what we saw he could be. Number two catcher, Buster Posey. He was hurt much of last year, lost his power when he was playing, but I'm confident that he has a couple more good seasons in him before he has to move to first base. He hits 300, has good on base. I just see a lot of Joe Mauer in him, which scares me, because these guys were elite hitters, and then suddenly they are getting hurt all the time, losing their power, and that's a little troublesome, but that's what happens with catchers. I mean, he's won 3 world championships, Buster Posey has. That's a career right there. I'm not taking anything away from him, but he can become one of the best catchers of all time if he can keep it up. Right now, he's just a San Francisco Giant, great borderline Hall of Famer, because, I mean, when a guy mans 3 championship teams, you got to consider that. And then my number one catcher is JT Realmuto with the Philadelphia Phillies. They just acquired him for their prospects. But JT hits for a high average, power, has some speed, good fielder. He's the one who's like across the board above average in everything, which makes him great. So he is my number one catcher. Moving on to first base, my number 10 spot, Max Muncy of the LA Dodgers, came out of nowhere, took the league by storm with some good power, but especially his discipline, had a ton of walks. He was good in the playoffs. His season was semi-inconsistent. He got off to a torrid start and then just was good. Hopefully he can keep it up, because there's a lot of potential there with him, and the Dodgers could really use what he brought to the table last season. Number 9, Jesus Aguilar of the Milwaukee Brewers. He has incredible power, like off the charts. He didn't really play full-time last year, still hit 30-plus homers. His defense, it's less to be desired, but I will take it, surely. Number 8, Oakland A's first baseman, Matt Olson. He's a good combination of offense, defense. He hits 20-plus homers, 260 average, but his fielding's really great. And he's also young, so I am hoping that he can take that next step up and not take any steps backwards. So that's why I have him number 8 on this list. Number 7, best first baseman, I have Jose Abreu, the Chicago White Sox steady productor. He hits for power, average. He is the pretty much constant in that lineup for the past few years. Everyone else around him is up and down, but Abreu you can rely on to give you a competitive at-bat. And yes, his defense isn't great, but he's someone that I would want on my team. He was an all-star last year, and he is in line for another contract real soon. So we'll see. Number 6, first baseman. He's all over the diamond, but I put him at first base. Matt Carpenter of the St. Louis Cardinals. He could play some third this year, but last year he played a lot first, so I have Matt Carpenter there. He's a good power hitter. His production has gone up in that category lately, but it's really about his contact walks. He gets on base. That's the thing with Matt Carpenter. Number 5, first baseman, Rhys Hoskins of the Philadelphia Phillies. Hit 30 homers last year, 250 average. I think he can get that up and become a real 300 threat with a better average than 250. He's going back to first base this season. They traded Carlos Santana in order to get him back to that position because he was atrocious in the outfielder. So I'm expecting more from him because he'll be comfortable in his position. Number four, first baseman Joey Votto. Power numbers were down last year. So was the average. He was only hit 280. But you can still rely on him to hit 400 on base percentage each season. And he is a competitor. He's getting up there in age. He's 34 now. But he has that contract, which takes him to age 40. So he's going to be playing. Number three, first baseman Anthony Rizzo of the Chicago Cubs. Not his best last season, but he was progressing quite well. And I think if the Cubs are going to reach their full potential, they need everything they can get from him and Chris Bryant. Those are the two that I think are the ones that in the middle of that lineup you need every day to be there and give it their shot. And we saw that when they won the championship. Who was the core of that team? It wasn't Javi Baez. It was Rizzo and Bryant. So they need him. Number two, Paul Goldschmidt, the new St. Louis Cardinal. He arguably, people say, should be the number one first baseman in the league. But he was a bit inconsistent in the first half last season and then came back strong. There's a reason why I don't have him number one. And it's not due to him, but my number one is Freddie Freeman of the Atlanta Braves. He's really operating in a lineup where he is the guy. Goldschmidt also had that, but Freddie Freeman, to me, he is a franchise player. He comes every day, hits 300, 20-plus home runs. His power is not elite level, but his at-bats, if you watch them, he makes them long. He is pitched to very selectively, and he really is that heartbeat of the Braves. They made the playoffs last year. A lot of that was because he was healthy. Because in years where they're bad, it's because he has not played every day. So Freddie Freeman is my number one first baseman. And I think he's been around a while. He's going to stay this way for a while. Second base. Number 10, Travis Shaw of the Milwaukee Brewers. They just signed Mike Moustakas to a one-year deal, which means Travis Shaw has to go back to second base, where his defense is less than great, but he's a good offensive player. And so I have him at number 10. Number 9, second baseman, the new Yankee, DJ LeMahieu. He's going to be playing all over the infield, apparently. What I see is happening is Tulowitzki getting hurt, Gleyber Torres being the short, DJ playing second every day. But that's just what I see. He hits 300, great fielder, gold glove winner. And yes, his power is not great, but hopefully there's not a decline from his Colorado Rocky days. So I have him at number 9. Number 8, Daniel Murphy. Apparently he's playing first this year with the Rockies, but last year he played a lot of second base. So that is where I have him on this list. Good hitter. Yes, he's getting up there in age, but he's competitive, and I think he will bring a lot to that Rockies team because they need guys who can get on base for their power bats and Charlie Blackmon and Arenado. So I can see Murphy being a good number two hitter in that lineup. Number 7, Scooter Jeanette of the Cincinnati Reds. Really came out of nowhere 2 years ago, and he's been consistent since. It's not like it was only one season. It's been 2 years of 280, 20 homers, good RBI production. He's not a flash in the pan for sure. I remember when he was with the Brewers and he was really just a platoon hitter, but no, he is the real deal, and he's one I feel should get a contract extension because he's been speaking out about it. You don't want his attitude getting in the clubhouse, and I would give him a 10 mil a year deal. Number 6, Whit Merrifield of the Royals. He was a big trade candidate, but instead he got the extension with them, which was a very team-friendly deal. Thing is, he's already 31, but talk about power and speed. Power, not necessarily in home runs, but in doubles. His doubles numbers are off the charts, and he steals a lot of bases, plays good defense. Number five, second baseman, Ozzie Albies of the Atlanta Braves. He's only 21 last year, but he's a 2020 threat and a real spark plug on that team. He needs to get more disciplined. That's the thing. But boy, is he fun to watch. Number four, second baseman, Gleyber Torres of the New York Yankees. There's a lot of Cano in him. And he was a bit inconsistent last year, but at his height, he carried the team. And they were a lot better after he got called up. And his defense is good. He has power. He has a fine eye. Hopefully, he can get a little better with the strikeouts and being more consistent in the field. But Gleyber Torres is someone who has superstar potential, and he's very young. Number three, this is who I compared him to, Robinson Cano of the New York Mets. He's 36, but he's still highly productive. I would take Cano as my second baseman any day, and we'll see how he does. He didn't play all last season due to that suspension for PEDs. And so, Robbie Cano, don't you know? I don't know. Number two, Javier Baez. This was a tough one. I think he's going to go back to second base this year because Addison Russell's back on the team. So I have Javi Baez, number two, hit 30 home runs last year. Real MVP candidate. Carried that Cubs team for much of the season because, like I said, Bryant and Rizzo weren't there. But I just see him declining. He has this swing that's not very repetitive. It's he swings like with all his might. Strikes out a lot still. Yes, he's fun, charismatic. I just don't have number one on my list. And that goes to Jose Altuve of the Houston Astros. Did take a step back last year from his incredible production of like a 340 average, which he's been averaging for three seasons. But Altuve is still my number two. Number one, second base. Third base, number 10 on my list is Miguel Andujar of the New York Yankees. Yes, his fielding was really bad last year, but a big thing, whether he'll be on this list or not when the season starts, is if his defense improved. And I think it really will, because if it hadn't, then I think the Yankees would have gone out and gotten a replacement for him. You can call LeMahieu insurance for that, which he will probably spell him at third a little bit. But I have Andujar on this list because of his potential, that step up that he can take, because he was darn good last year. Number nine, third base, Josh Donaldson of the Atlanta Braves. He was signed this offseason, and I expect him to bounce back at the plate. At the end of last season, he was hitting well. As long as he can stay in the field, that's the key for him. Number eight, third base, Justin Turner of the LA Dodgers. He's a good hitter. He's signed long-term with them, and he's a clubhouse leader. I'm a big Justin Turner fan. Number seven, Eugenio Suarez of the Cincinnati Reds. This guy's still young, great offensive numbers, not the best defensive third baseman, but boy, Eugenio Suarez is one of those underrated threats who really makes the Reds that offensive firepower that they've been known for these past couple years. Only thing is they have no pitching. We'll see if that changes this year. They made a lot of additions. And we can go through that during our roster previews coming in the next couple weeks. Number six, third baseman, Anthony Rendon. People call him very underrated, and he is if you look at his numbers, but there's a lot of elite third baseman in this league. So he comes in at number six with the Nationals, and he's going to be getting paid real soon. Number five, this is where I have former MVP Chicago Cubs, Chris Bryant. His numbers have been on the decline since they won the championship, but he's still young. I'm going to give him one more year, call him an elite third base, but he hasn't really showed it. He's one of those players that I think the intangibles really elevate what the numbers say. Number four, third base, Matt Chapman. I might be overrating defense here, but boy, is he a wizard. And his hitting, he hit a lot better than people projected last season. I could see him go 270 with 20 homers, 20 plus homers. And of course, that insane defense, which is rivaled only by Nolan Arenado at third. So he could be on the up, he could be on the down, but I have a number four. which is impressive. All right, the top three are the elite levels at this position. Number third, Alex Bregman of the Houston Astros. He hit 30 homers last year, really took it up to that superstar level, carrying the middle of that order last season. But I don't know if he's going to be that consistent with it. And so I have him at third, mainly because number two, Jose Ramirez, is a little bit more dynamic. He also hit 30-plus homers with 100 RBIs. But he has more power and speed. And so both players are in their early 20s. So they're going to be at the position for a while. And my number one, similar to the past couple years, Nolan Arenado of the Rockies. He is a free agent after the season, but he does it all. That's the thing. And so he's my number one third base. Shortstop. This position is interesting because there's a good mix of young players with veterans. I have number 10, Elvis Andrus. He bounced back last season with a good average, played every day. Number 9, Gene Segura, a new Philly. He's a good leadoff hitter. His average has been consistently high for the past few years. Number 8, Xander Bogaerts of the Boston Red Sox. Good mix of power, contact, decent fielder, not great. So I have him at number 8. Number 7, Didi Gregorius of the Yankees. He's going to miss half the season, sadly. But when he's on there, boy, is he dynamic and fun to watch. Number 6, short, Carlos Correa. Had a really down year last year with the Astros, but I'm expecting him to bounce back. He has too much talent not to. Number 5, Corey Seager of the Dodgers. Missed almost all last season with injury, but he's coming back. Reason they didn't sign Machado. And if there's anything he showed from his first few years is that he's elite. Number 4, short, I have Andrelton Simmons. He's been around a long time, but his defense is still the best in the league. But his offense has caught up a little bit. He hit in the 290s last season, which is great. He walks more than he ever did. So I'm a big Andrelton Simmons fan. Number 3, Trevor Story. Boy, he put up MVP season last year with his 30 homers. Great doubles. He had over 80 extra base hits last season, which is insane. He had a high, high slugging percentage of 530. So Trevor Story, if he can repeat that. But we really only saw that last year. And then half his rookie year. So that's why he's at number 3. But the next two are elite. I have number 2, short, Manny Machado, newly acquired Padre, because he can do it all. He's a superstar. And then my number 1 short is Francisco Lindor of the Indians. Huge blow that he's going to miss a bit of time with an injury. But he is a guy who I did not expect the power numbers to be as good as they are. My left field, number 10, Marcell Ozuna of the Cardinals. Yes, he didn't put up that superstar campaign last season that many expected, but he was darn good. 9, Andrew Benintendi of the Red Sox. This is a lot on what I expect from him, not what he showed. I think he'll take a step up. Number 8, Tommy Pham, the Rays. Good hitter, can also field really well. Number 7, left field, Chris Davis. A lot of the DH, but he put up 40 homers 3 seasons in a row. That is incredible production and really is a spark plug in that A's lineup. Number 6, left field, Justin Upton of the Angels. Very consistent, good power, good contact, good player. Number 5, I have Ronald Acuna Jr., the Atlanta Braves 20-year-old who's dynamic. I'm not sure if he's going to become a superstar this year or take another year to progress, but boy, is he young, and I think he will take over the league eventually. But right in front of him, I have Juan Soto, who for this season at least, I think is going to be better, mainly because of his eye. The amount of walks he gets is incredible. Not as dynamic a athlete, but in terms of hitter, I'd have him up for an at-bat. Number 3, left field, I put Giancarlo Stanton in left field simply because that's where he fits on the Yankees if he had to play a position. I don't have a DH for this list. So Giancarlo Stanton is my number 3. And he had a bit of a down year for him last year, but I expect him to bounce back. People in their first years in pinstripes always do a little worse than they do typically. So we'll see. JD Martinez, I put in left field. Guy put up monster offensive numbers last year. And so I think number two on this list is very impressive when number one is NL MVP Christian Yelich, who's a beast. And so he's an elite player right now. Boy, the Marlins get fleeced with the players they lost. But that's just that. Center field, number 10, Harrison Bader, St. Louis Cardinals. Number 9, A.J. Pollock. 8, Starling Marte. 7, Malik Smith. 6, Aaron Hicks. 5, Charlie Blackmon of the Rockies. 4, Cody Bellinger of the Dodgers. 3, George Springer of the Astros. 2, Lorenzo Cain of the Brewers. And 1, Mike Trout. I'm flying through this, just limited time. But boy, center field is always going to belong to Mike Trout, unless he sits the entire year. That's how incredible he is. And then I have Lorenzo Cain number 2, just because of his qualities that he brings to the top of a lineup. George Springer's a bounce-back candidate. Cody Bellinger also is that. Right field, number 10, Nick Markakis of the Braves. 9, Brandon Nimmo of the Mets. 8, Andrew McCutchen of the Phillies. 7, Nicholas Castellanos of the Tigers. 6, Yasiel Puig of the Reds. 5, Nelson Cruz of the Twins. 4, Mitch Haniger of the Mariners. 3, Bryce Harper, unsigned. 2, Aaron Judge. 1, Mookie Betts. I don't think it's any surprise there, except maybe that I put Judge in front of Harper, but I think Judge is ultimately the better player at this point. Mitch Haniger has superstar potential. Cruz, I know, is a DH, but if he had to play somewhere, it would be right. Can still hit for good power. Yasiel Puig, playing his contract year, could bring it up a notch, as well as Castellanos. And Kutch is a really steady player. All right, starters. This one was tough to do, but I have number 10, Luis Severino of the Yankees. At his best, he's an ace, but we saw his inconsistency last year. 9, Gerrit Cole, the Astros. He is playing for a contract. He could take it up a notch as well. And last year, I mean, that was a steal by the Astros. He really carried them. As well with number 8 on my list, Justin Verlander, who really had a career renaissance and is another playing like an ace. Number 7, I have Clayton Kershaw on this list. Used to always be number 1. Well, now he doesn't pitch as much, gets hurt a lot. But I have Clayton Kershaw at number 7. Aaron Nola of the Phillies at number 6. Finished 3rd in Cy Young. He's a beast. Number 5, Blake Snell of the Rays, Cy Young winner. But 4, I have Corey Kluber, who's just shown it time and time again. Number 3, Chris Sale, who at his best is better than anyone. 2nd, Jacob DeGrom, who was incredible to watch last season. But, I mean, just due to consistency and really knowing what they're going to give me, I have number 1, Max Scherzer, who is an absolute horse. Can pitch more than anyone each season. Great mix of dominance with durability. Yes, Jacob DeGrom was better last season, but the year before that, no, and the year before that, no. So he'll have to prove to me one more time that he can pitch to that historic level yet again in order to dethrone Max Scherzer, who, by the way, that contract that Nationals gave him has been a steal for them so far. I mean, there's still years on it, but so far, so good. And then relievers. I have number 10, Sean Doolittle of the Nationals. Number 9, Roberto Osuna of the Astros. 8, Blake Treinen of the Oakland A's. 7, Craig Kimbrough, unsigned. 6, Aroldis Chapman, Yankees. 5, Kenley Jansen, Dodgers. 4, Dellin Betances, New York Yankees. 3, this is debatable, but I have Chad Green. I think he's going to take it up a notch this year. 2, Edwin Diaz of the Mets. And then number 1, Josh Hader of the Milwaukee Brewers, who really was incredible last offseason. Or last postseason, I should say. So that is my relievers. And then final top 10 overall. I have 10 Aaron Judge, 9 Jacob DeGrom, 8 Bryce Harper, 7 Christian Yelich, 6 Francisco Lindor, 5 Jose Ramirez, 4 Nolan Arenado, 3 Max Scherzer, 2 Mookie Betts, 1 Mike Trout. So that is my MLB rankings for 2019 season. Next week, we will do some roster outlooks, hopefully talk about the Bryce Harper signing, which will most likely happen in the next few days. Also, we will jump into more of the NBA, getting closer to the playoffs, and further developments in the sporting world. So thank you for tuning in this week. You have listened to Sports Talk Radio on WJRH 104.9 FM, Lafayette College, Eastern Pennsylvania. You can listen to this on repeat on WJRH.org and tune in to this station next week, Wednesday, 10 a.m. for another episode. Hope you enjoy the most likely snow this afternoon. Stay warm and let's go sports.
Some are born and some are dying. It's Alpha and Omega's kingdom come. And the whirlwind is in the thorn tree. The virgins are all trimming their wicks. The whirlwind is in the thorn tree. It's hard for thee to